Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 3rd of September, recording at 7:28 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook, but I can't do that in isolation. In other words, I really do need to mention some of the quite important, in my view, technical action that we have seen here today. And I will do that, but then move on into the medium and longer term picture outlook. So this will be a somewhat longer audio than most, perhaps. But let me get on with it. I said there were some surprises in my comment, at least for me. And a mild surprise that I've been talking about all week is that when I got back from my holiday on Tuesday, I looked around and the bounces that we'd seen from those mid-August lows for the Western stock markets suggested to me that maybe we were going to see a little bit more than just another small technical rally against the background of short-term oversold indicators. Another factor that influenced me was the increase in bearish sentiment, although it was by no means an extreme in bearish sentiment, which would be a much more convincing bit of data. But it's we very rarely get really extremes in market sentiment. Lucky if that happens once or twice a year in any given market. The other factor that had certainly influenced me was the general strength of the emerging Asian stock markets. Now, before I went away at the end of July, I had been talking about that as a factor to suggest that stock markets were unlikely to get the collapse this year that some people had begun to forecast as sentiment became a bit more bearish. And lastly, I would also point to a strong improvement in a number of the East European stock markets. Now, you haven't seen charts of those, or at least not from me, and I do promise to post some of those next week. The main exception is Russia, although that has improved recently, but a number of the other Eastern European stock market indices have pushed through to new high ground. And so that has caused me to think in terms of this medium term, the possibility of a medium term recovery. And my best guess at this stage is that that would get underway, again, highly qualified, provided the August lows are not taken out, provided oil doesn't get another surge on the upside. Then I think really from the latter part of October onwards, and quite possibly extending into the new year, in the first quarter of the new year, and that's a period when we've often seen seasonal strength, the chances of that seasonal strength are less during secular bear markets, as we certainly have on Wall Street. But nevertheless, as I've often mentioned on secular bear markets, when I say that word, say very long term and extending on to perhaps 2020 or so before we get another secular bull market, a lot of people get depressed about that. And I even had one subscriber come in and said, well, that really extended beyond his lifetime expectancy here, and he was feeling quite despondent about this. I'm not at all despondent about it. It just means that we don't have a buy and hold environment. Well, surprise, surprise. And the other factor means is that if we don't have a buy and hold environment, then we are going to have to look for medium term trends, of which there will be many, up and down. Now, the downward trends will tend to be quite vicious. But there will be these periodic upward moves, and some of those will really be quite strong. Although, as you know, I don't expect the Standard & Poor's 500 index to move meaningfully to new high ground for at least another decade. But that won't stop a number of the emerging Asian markets, emerging European markets, and no doubt some of the emerging South American markets from doing considerably better. But Europe, I expect that to be pretty much in the grips of what takes place on Wall Street. And Japan, among the developed markets, I think will still have the best potential during this period of the next decade or more. But it will be a slow burn. And if there's a rival, a strong rival, and there for Japan, it might well be Australia, which has performed in stellar fashion here this year. But what's another factor as to why we might get this medium-term recovery? Would I rate the odds in this during the fourth quarter of this year and first quarter of next year? I rate the odds on that at a little over 50%, so this is hardly a screamingly obvious case in my mind. But if we are going to have that move, then we will see a gradual build-up of technical evidence, including good support near above the August lows for the Western markets, and that continued leadership from some of the emerging markets. That's what I would be more inclined to play, but I don't doubt for a minute that there would be opportunities in any of the Western markets that a number of you prefer to deal in, if only because you're domiciled there. Okay, now let's move on to the next category of markets. Now this is not so much in the nature of the surprise, although today's, when you get a dynamic such as we saw today, there's always a surprise element. But you might recall I've been saying that I felt that the rally, which I'm in bonds, government bond prices, which I've regarded as being very much of a top extension rally, that I felt that that was beginning to look long in the tooth. And at the very bottom of yesterday's subscribers area comment, I posted a report, I think it was by Mark Stevenson of CLSA, and said, have a look at the chart on bond yields, which he had showed in that report. And he felt that this was approaching a terminal juncture, and that very much coincided with my own view. Well, today we had rather extraordinary action in the bond market, and made me a little bit suspicious. I actually rang up Bloomberg and City Index just to see if these were legitimate trades. But what basically happened, as you can see on that chart, I've posted the December contract chart, is that the bond market prices, and we're talking about bond prices here that I've illustrated, they surged just before the employment data was released at 1:30 British Standard Time, or British Summer Time, I beg your pardon. So just before 1:30, when that report came out, the bond market surged as if someone felt very strongly that we were going to get disappointing figures for the U.S. economy. Well, that didn't happen. They came in pretty much in line with expectation, maybe slightly better in terms of manufacturing jobs. And then the bond market turned south, producing that big outside day, or key day reversal characteristic on the charts. Now, I think I had said yesterday in my audio, and perhaps the day before, that I was looking for a signal, wanted to see a chart signal to suggest that this move was over. And this certainly looks like a good signal. The one proviso that I have, unfortunately, I don't like to have provisos, and that is that the action was quite extraordinary, that these bonds would have surged so much just before that data was released. And it was also a move that took place in sympathy, I assume, that in the European bond markets, I'm talking about the Bund futures and the UK gilt futures, and we saw it in euro dollar futures getting back to the US market. So a number of them did perform in this manner. And so much so, and it occurred so quickly, just to spike up and straight back down, all in the matter of a few minutes, that made me a little bit suspicious. It seemed to be a bit of an anomaly. But that proviso aside, given the prior run that we had had, the prior rally that we'd had in these government bonds, say, I have been looking for a sell signal, and this is the first time I've actually seen one. And therefore, I did not act on this today. Partly, I wanted to talk about it, and also I was surprised by the early closings that we had today on Wall Street, which I ought to have anticipated, but did not for a number of the markets. Pretty much everything looks like, except for the stock market. But I'm quite likely to short the U.S. Treasury bonds on, well, I won't be able to do it on Monday, so that would be on Tuesday. Now, on Monday, I may well short the Japanese JGBs, which had a similar, very good, what to my mind is no more than a top extension rally that is looking played out. Now, I have felt that in recent months that bond markets were taking their cue from stock markets rather than the more traditional historical other way around. That's the way I've tended to read it, at any rate. And therefore, if we were to see medium-term rallies in Q4 this year and Q1 next year for stock markets, that would certainly, in my view, lead to some switching of money out of bonds and into equity. So that script would fit. But remember, I've said I only see this medium-term rally potential, which I've qualified as a little better than 50-50 here. But possibly the clear picture, despite my slight reservations about that spike in a matter of minutes, will be in the bonds overall. So as I say, I will almost certainly be shorting the JGBs, the Japanese government bonds, on Monday, and the U.S. Treasuries when they reopen on Tuesday. And if I get follow through on that in my favor, then I would almost certainly very quickly put in an in-the-money stop and leverage the position up, looking for a test of the lower side of the pattern. Now, what kind of fundamental script might we have in the background that could contribute to that type of move? And here, well, I listened to parts of President Bush's speech, and we'll hope to catch the whole thing last night, but deficits aside, he does seem determined to have a number of massive fiscal spending programs involving education and healthcare and housing. And this is something that has worried some of the fiscal conservatives for quite some time. And clearly the gamble that the Bush administration is taking on is that it can, by stimulating and stimulating and stimulating the economy with fiscal spending, that they can create the conditions for a more robust growth rate, which would then create the tax revenue to enable them to pay down more of the government debt. In other words, they're trying to recreate more of a 1990s economic environment. Now, that's a very tall order, and I feel that it's actually too tall an order. But there's no doubt that they can stimulate enough to create more growth, as we've seen over the last year. But Peter Bennett quoted the Richard Russell line about inflate or die for the U.S. economy, which Richard has been repeating for years. And I very much agree with him on that the U.S. does have to stimulate very, very aggressively in terms of not only the fiscal spending, which I've just been talking about, but in terms of the monetary expansion. And that would be bad for the government bonds. So in the short term, we see more borrowing, so that increases the supply of government bonds, a lot of paper sloshing around the system, a lot of liquidity sloshing around the system. That has inflationary implications, as I've said for really quite some time, and I can see that as a script for a turnaround and slide in the U.S. bond market. And if we had growth expectations for Japan, which have taken a knock recently, growth expectations just about everywhere have taken a knock recently, sentiment changes, changes there on a medium-term basis, that would justify a sell-off in the JGBs. So that's the way I'm looking at this stage. Now, I think that gilts and the bunds would have similar patterns, but my hunch is that the better moves, if I'm right on this call, would be in the U.S. Treasuries, the long-dated Treasuries, and also in the JGBs. Now, the other area, and this is probably the biggest surprise for me, the bond thing's not really a surprise. I mentioned the mild surprise on the possibility of this medium-term equity rally, which I certainly would not be thinking was a very much of a prospect before I went away on my holiday. The other factor, say the somewhat bigger surprise, is that this dollar pattern. Now, you know that the currencies have been in these very, very narrow trading ranges, and narrow trade, and this is for many months, narrow trading ranges are very difficult to analyze. And in the case of take the euro, for instance, and I promise to post more of these charts next week, and I'll have a little bit more time to just concentrate entirely on this service. When you get a sort of a big trading range, as the market moves down, I'm talking about the euro against the dollar now, and as the euro moves down to test support, that pattern, that range, begins to look really quite top-heavy. And conversely, if you get the euro rallying back up to the other upper side, it can look more like a possible launch for another move on the upside. However, those of you who have attended the chart seminar will know that, as far as I'm concerned, that when you've had a major move on the upside, such as 2 years or so for the euro running up against the dollar, and then you get a considerably larger trading range, that even if that larger trading range, which is created by supply and demand being in balance, that even if that does support a move to new highs, in other words, with the euro moving above that 130 level, that it's an unreliable, these big trading ranges after long advances are unreliable continuation patterns. And we've seen that a lot, and they tend to be, when new highs follow, they tend, the prior range tends to be a penultimate high, and very often we don't get much additional move on the upside. But that possibility, which I had been looking for, saying that probably I felt that the dollar would go back and test its lows, in other words, if we talk in euro terms, that the euro would go back and test its highs and perhaps move a little bit higher. When I look at some of these charts now, that's looking a lesser possibility to me at this stage, and the prospect of a stronger dollar rally than we have seen, it becomes a more is beginning to look like a more beginning to look like more of a possibility. That might provide some real trading opportunities. Now, I have to think, well, what would the script for that be if we're going to get a stronger U.S. dollar? Well, the first thing that will come to mind, the minds of currency traders, would be the carry trade. In other words, we had had so many borrowings in U.S. dollars, and so many people were short of U.S. dollars, and although that has been unwound to a certain extent. No one can be completely precise as to the extent to which it's been unwound. A lot of people still feel that there are some substantial carry trade positions out there. So that would be one factor, but I think it would have to require more than that. I think it would require the stimulus, perhaps if Bush is reelected, the additional stimulus coming from the Bush administration, causing that stronger U.S. economy plus inflationary pressures, causing the Fed to push U.S. short-term interest rates a bit higher, plus if the bond market is softening, higher long-term interest rates, which might well cause more people to switch into the U.S. dollar. So that's a plausible script in my view. And as I say, that would create some real trading opportunities. But I'm still forming this opinion. And I want to think about it a little bit more and look at more technical studies and post those for you. I don't think there's any great urgency in terms of acting right now or immediately next week. Now, the other area which is a bit of a mild surprise, but I mentioned to you yesterday that some of those industrial metals were really looking quite top-heavy. Now, a number of people will say, well, look at the China slowdown that, and also the carry trade. That's no surprise at all. But many of those people were saying this when we had the shakeout in the second quarter of this year for those metals, and it was really quite a sharp shakeout. You remember silver, I think, went back down to it got down to certainly under $6. It was close to about $5.50. But during that shakeout, a lot of people were saying, "Well, this is going to continue because of the China factor." And then the charts began to firm up, and you know, I went back in and built up quite a substantial silver position and quite a substantial, a smaller lead position that I held really for quite some time. Well, a number of these metals, as I say, now look really quite top heavy, and I'm now thinking that my next move in some of these supply and elasticity trades, where I do feel that we are likely to see major long-term bull markets, but that doesn't mean that we won't get a number of significant corrections and that we may be beginning another correction that would certainly have tradable significance on the downside in those industrial metals. And I say the China slowdown is one plausible a script for that, plus a little more unwinding of the carry trade. Now, a bit bigger surprise than that. I say that's not a huge surprise because they had rallied very, very strongly in that period up through July. So recovered a lot. I think most of those sell-offs were in the first quarter. But then they rallied back very, very strongly, and therefore they were vulnerable as resistance was coming in near the highs. If you were listening to the audios back in July, remember I was talking about getting out of my lead position because it had done pretty well all you could reasonably expect in terms of the chart action, and given that big technical rally. So these patterns, say these base metals, these industrial metals, are looking top heavy. Now, in the bigger surprise league today, as the dollar strengthened in here today, I thought, well, that's one would expect that to weigh a bit on the metals, and it did. It pushed gold back down to 400, 399.15 at one stage, before closing at 445. But it hit silver quite hard, and the range on silver today this is December silver, was 683, and it was hovering in near the 680 level for most of the day. Then the dollar strengthened, and it got clobbered and fell down to 650 before bouncing up. Now, I still have 3 units of my Baby Steps silver trades. That's quite a small position relative to what I had, say, in June. And they are in profit still, albeit diminished by this decline that we've seen today, some 22 cents on the December silver position. And that move has a little bit too much of the look of a dynamic about it, small dynamic, and that's unnerved me a bit. I was actually getting ready to close that silver position, and I looked up, so the market had closed much earlier today, because this being the Friday before the Memorial Day holiday in the United States on Monday. Now, I am thinking, should I just walk away from those silver positions? Also, I have a number of Baby Steps bids underneath the silver market, and I think they start at about 641 and are roughly every 10 cents down. And I certainly am likely to take out the higher of those levels. In other words, I might clear them out down to about $6. If we were to see a significant sell-off in silver, then that would certainly get me interested once again. But I fear that we do have that risk after the very good rally that saw silver push back up over the $7 level. And as I say, that is a bit of a surprise, because precious metals had been quite steady recently, and I could easily see, well, so I felt on Tuesday and Wednesday, Thursday, wouldn't have surprised me if silver had broken upwards once again. But it my confidence in that happening has clearly taken a spear knock, so I may reduce that position considerably, or entirely. And I may look to short some of the industrial metals, as I've already mentioned to you. Then we get to the energy contracts, and while I mentioned the last couple of days that with oil we did have some support in the sort of $40-$42 region, I'm talking about the U.S. NYMEX contract. Now, natural gas, and that's my worst position. You know, I closed out most of my positions, my trading positions, before going away, and I did hold on to a few of them, and unfortunately one of them was a natural gas position where I'd been stopped out at a profit. It was my fifth or sixth consecutive profit in natural gas, and then I sort of rather impulsively, as the price fell back quite sharply towards some prior support, reopened the position again, described it as impulsive at the time, and that certainly proved to be the case, and I foolishly didn't protect it while I was away, because I was thinking of adding to that position. Now, that's taken quite a big hit. That has seriously eroded my earlier trading profits that I had in natural gas, which is not a very smart thing at all. Natural gas is now beginning to look quite overextended, so I'm looking for, on the downside, so I'm looking for some sort of upward dynamic to catch, and then may even add to that position if I do see that. But the fact that natural gas fell so sharply, which I certainly had not expected, so that's a surprise, does make me think a little bit more about the crude oil. Now, these two are unlikely to diverge for all that long, and it does beg the question, who's actually leading here? Well, we had crude leading on the upside, and all of the petroleum-related contracts and following, and crude and gasoline being very strong, and so on. And that helped drag natural gas up, and I had originally been in the crudes, and then I had gone into natural gas, because I felt that the crude was becoming very political. It was certainly an election issue in the United States, and I was worried about the possibility of the Bush administration might release some crude oil from its strategic stockpile, and that's still a possibility. And if that were to take place, that would certainly knock the oil price back quite sharply in the short to medium term, and that would be very good for stock markets. So a lot of these themes tie together, but at this stage I'm talking about possible scenarios. I am not going to stand up here and say, right, that's it, this is clearly what I think is actually going to happen. But I do see evidence of these possible changes here in the charts that are always my guide in these markets. And when the charts begin to diverge from my theories, my script, in other words, I do not want to rationalize the change in the price action. I really find that that can be fatal, and I'm much more inclined to adjust at minimum the timing tactics in my thinking. Now, very quick last couple of words on these long-term themes. I have mentioned this secular bear market repeatedly for Wall Street, but that might just mean an extended very long trading range, so I don't need to go on and say any more on that. I do feel that government bonds are heading into a secular or have already commenced a secular bear market as of June last year, and they're very much in the top extension phase, and therefore in terms of bear trading, there's probably, if I'm right, there's better potential in shorting bonds than there is in shorting stock markets. And in terms of currencies, as I've said so often in the past, we don't get the once in a generation secular trends that we often see in stock markets and generational long trends, secular trends. We don't get those in currencies the way we do in stock markets and in bond markets and also in commodity markets, if only because no country can withstand a strong currency for many, many years. And so they tend to increase the supply of that currency. But the trend that I had been looking for, which was maybe to see a little bit more dollar weakness, but not a whole lot, that I am needing to rethink a bit, and there is the possibility that we may get another medium-term rally in the U.S. dollar. But this is preliminary evidence that I'm looking at this stage. And finally, in terms of the commodities, and you know I've mentioned supply and elasticity over and over and over again this year and much of last year, and this is still a very, very big theme, but these commodity markets can be exceptionally volatile, as you know. And if we were to have this environment of rallying stock markets in the fourth quarter of this year and first quarter of next year, and if we were to see some additional strength in the U.S. dollar, that could very easily coincide with a sell-off in a number of these supply and elasticity trades, which would be tradable, and then those would create even better buying opportunities once the metal sector and some of the agricultural commodities got well and truly oversold once again. Okay, folks, have an absolutely splendid weekend.